We're talking about the strength of Allah. At least one listens to Dhamma, respectfully, carefully, meticulously, pays proper attention to the Dhamma preached by the Buddha. Such is the strength of a noble person, a person who possesses the Aryan view. So which kind of Dhamma is it? This is the kind of Dhamma preached by the Buddha. And Virya means discipline or rules of conduct for monks. And one listens to them, or the Buddha preached. And what the Buddha preached is for the sake of realization of the path and its fruit, and for the liberation from suffering. Understanding this, one listens to the Dhamma and Virya. And the text describes many renderings about this Dhamma Virya. And if we have to describe that, group is giving a lot of time, so not enough time to discuss all of it. So we can only just touch on this subject. As Dhamma is teaching for the purpose of one's welfare, and Virya as a discipline, how to conduct oneself. These are considered a Buddha, which is just conducting feeling from the understanding of knowledge. This is the Dhamma for the purpose of these, as this is calculated by the Buddha. And as for the Virya, the Virya conduct, how to control oneself, how to control one's physical, body, mental abilities, and such is Virya. So when these two are combined, it becomes Dhamma Virya, doctrine, discipline. In order to, the Virya is preached so as to cultivate one's physical, body, mental abilities, so that it becomes purified, unblemished, general, and immutable. So the Buddha gave this Dhamma Virya with compassionate feeling, with compassion, with great compassion, and the knowledge of the exposition of Dhyasana, not for any other purpose, but for the purpose of welfare of all beings to be liberated from suffering. To put it down to practice, your views are practicing now the way of mindfulness, Satipatthana, as a, in order to inspire all yogis who have begun to practice, or those who are going to practice. The Buddha has declared openly the seven benefits at the beginning of the great discourse on the way of mindfulness, as the sure methods to purify one's mind, so that the mind is purified from pollutions of such as great hatred delusion. And when one has a chance to there's a chance for these things to arise in your mind, then you become obsessed with these defilements. And if, unless you are able to control with the correct methods, they are bound to be transformed into transgressive type of defilements, that is, transgressive action by body and speech. And in this way, there are three types of defilements: refined, medium, and gross form of defilements, which are the cause for 100% of human suffering. So this is declared a sure path to be free from these defilements. By noting four kinds of objects, namely the objects of the body, feeling, objects of the mind, and general objects as they arise in your body, when the spirit of the Dhyana activating your mindfulness on ever arising objects. And in this way, the benefit has been revealed, declared at the beginning of the great discourse on the way of mindfulness. Such is Hari Nari or Dhamma. Now the yogis are practicing, paying attention to their body, noting rain or dead, just rising and falling as they arise at the moment of their arrival, in order to deepen their concentration on the arising object so that defilements of this life, craving, are not given a chance to arise in their stream of consciousness. They are said to be calm. And also, this craving, not only craving, but also ill will, anger, aversion, are not given a chance to arise in the stream of consciousness. Instead, they are said to be calm with the presence of Satipatthana. And other departments of pollutants are also not given a chance to arise. They are all calm with the presence of Satipatthana, first on a part-time basis. So this is the sure path for the purification of being as given in the tools of mindfulness. As Ekaya no Mego. On the side, purification of the mind, that is the advantages, the benefits of overcoming sorrow, even sorrow, lamentation, physical pain, mental distress, and eradicate the unmindful defilements which have been with us all along our lifetime, with the realization of the path and fruit of the noble ones. Such are the exact definite path revealed or declared by the Buddha. And such teaching is what is known as the Dhamma. So whoever takes the practice will be pulled away from the gravitational force of lust or craving raga, so that their mind will be uplifted. They will never be downgraded, and such quality of state is known as the Dhamma. When one is practicing the higher level discipline of the way of mindfulness, one should be well grounded in the basic vinaya discipline. As for monks, they have the rules, as much as in the lay people. There are things which are not to commit, wrongdoing by body and speech, and there are prohibitions. One should not do this, one should not speak like this, and one has to follow these instructions so as not to break them, and be able to live according to the disciplines. In this way, the Buddha has given laid out the rules of conduct for monks and also for lay people. In this way, with the disciplined room, one will be able to cultivate one's spiritual, verbal, mental behavior so that they become general and amiable. And in this way, the Buddha preached a vinaya, revealing the benefit of the practice. And this practice is the kind of disciplined rules laid down by the Buddha and preached by the Buddha. And when somebody is preaching the Dhamma vinaya, it is that one must pay full attention and hear it with full mind. And in what way one should listen or hear the Dhamma preached by the Buddha, when one is giving it, one should be able to pay attention, as is given in this expression, one should heed it. Achyankatuwa, and give it full attention, anadikatuwa. For us in the world, there are this one prosperity, welfare, for one's own living conditions, for our own livelihood. We have to seek means for our food, clothing and shelter. And that's one aspect of seeking. Another aspect is seek after welfare, one's own welfare. That is the practice of the three trainings, the Silasamadhi Sanya, moral virtue, concentration, and wisdom. These are the two aspects of prosperity. As for the first one, seeking one's livelihood, it is for one's own, the present life. And you might say it's for temporary sustaining our livelihood, our life on a temporary basis. It won't go beyond that. As for the second one, that is the prosperity of the practice of the free training, this is the real prosperity for one's conduct, one's practice, how to behave physically, how to behave verbally, and how to behave mentally, and how to cultivate knowledge. Deciding for that, towards that end, there are these instructions, a teaching, a guidance, together with the rules of conduct. And when one is hearing such things, one should regard them as one's own prosperity, one's own welfare. In the business world, you do business does not do lose, even a few dollars, a few pence, a few cents. And you'll be very careful not to lose the money. As for the farmers, they are very careful not to lose their seeds of their plants, and they have to be stored respectfully. So too with the hearing of the Dhamma. When one is hearing such Dhamma as speech proclaimed by the Buddha, one should heed it and pay full attention to it in accordance with this expression, Atyan Katawa and Manasi Katawa. Heeding it as though it is one's own property or welfare, and gives it full attention. So now the yogis are listening to such talks which are for their welfare and the rules of conduct to conduct themselves. And when one is heeding it, paying full attention to it, one is said to be behaving well as a yogi. As is given this expression, engages it with all one's mind. Tava seta, tava seta. The reason is one should put one's mind in full force in all three aspects, that is in the beginning of the discourse, in the middle, and also in the end of the discourse. One should heed it with full force, with full mind. Put all your attention in listening to the discourse, then only it will be tantamount to listening respectfully, paying full attention, without any distraction or any wavering. Such is how one hears the Dhamma. Then only it will be the power or strength of the Noble One, Ariya. So, person who possesses the Aryan view considers that, am I possessing this strength of a person who possesses the Aryan view? That is, am I listening with full force? He considers, he or she considers that, and he or she understands that he or she is fulfilling this requirement. And such is how one hears the Dhamma. This is how one does correctly, and in this way one performs one's self-scrutiny and coming to a definite decision. And this expression, hear the Dhamma as with eager ears, as is given by this expression, Oita Soto Yan Sunati. That means at this point that the commentaries describe the strength of the Noble One's Ariyas, that how they cherish hearing the Dhamma without seeing anything else or indulging in any conversation or distraction or restlessness. They are really putting full force into the Dhamma, putting their full mind into the Dhamma, and it is said that they are never satisfied with hearing the Dhamma. In the old days, Dhamma teachings used to be given at night time from the evening till dawn, and such is the strength of Ariyas to listen to Dhamma without any distraction or restlessness, paying full attention to the talk. At this point, the commentary is also revealed the strength of ordinary folks in listening to the Dhamma. As for ordinary folks, they go after good voice from the Dhamma teacher, as much as singing, and romantic stories. They want to hear such things as romantic stories. They're interested in hearing comedies with a touch of humor. If the Dhamma is given in an ordinary way, traditional way, they consider it very bland, very dry, and very not interesting. They don't take interest in it. Because they don't take interest in it, they might doze off while listening to a good Dhamma if it's preached in a traditional way, in a classical way. There will be no paying full attention, as already said in the case of Ariyas. And although their mind is restless, the body calms down. It's not the good way of calming down, it is the unwholesome bad way of calming down. That's like you say when you fall asleep, you say we are in deep concentration, instead of saying we are asleep. So too, we have a shrunken mind, and body is known as lina, and dozing off, and leaning on the nearest wall or post, he or she might just take a short nap. Such is the strength of the ordinary folks, as given in the commentaries. When the Purujanas hear the Dhamma, if they don't find it interesting, then they will not put full force in it, so full attention to the talk, and automatically they lose interest. Such is the nature of people if they don't take interest in the talk, or if their talks are not interesting for them. So this is Dhammadaya Pala. This is the usual strength of, in this case, of the Purujanas, the ordinary beings. In the case of the practice of Rati Dharma as well, in the beginning of the discourse, in the beginning, the talks on Saripadana is considered as uninteresting, very dry, without any embellishment, because it is only showing the practical aspect of the Dhamma. And in the beginning of the great discourse on mindfulness, seven benefits of the practice are given only in a very simple way. So simple that it will not be of interest to ordinary beings. And when it is undertaken as a practice, people will feel very dry, uninteresting. However, with faith and confidence in the Buddha, faith and confidence in the practice, if one undertakes the practice has been guided by the meditation teachers, one will be able to instill faith and confidence, Pada, in the practice, and then one will transform from dry practice to interesting one. And as the noting proceeds in the course of the practice, one will be able to experience what is known as piti, when that suggests which is present with mind and body, with minor feeling of death, sometimes rendered as thrills, running through the body, especially at Uddiyabhyanjana, the instantaneous rising and passing away of psychophysical phenomena, one will come to experience the major form of zest, piti, rapture. So that one will take interest in the practice, beginning to take interest in the practice, so much so that one will not wish to change one's sitting posture, nor will one wish to open one's eyes which are being closed. And at this stage, one is said to be developing a mind and insight, and originally one is said to be transformed from dryness, blandness, to interest, and because one is realizing the kind of pleasure which is unalloyed, that means it is not mixed with anything, it is good in itself and unforsakable. Because it is so good and you don't want to let go of it, it is always ever fresh and new. There's no such thing as fresh and new, just with one thing in an unalloyed state in ordinary world. It is only in the Dhamma, or in the practice of the deep Dhamma, that it is interesting and it is really good in an unalloyed state and something which is unforsakable. In this way, one comes to this stage and one will be able to listen and hear the Dhamma with interest. And that is not so in the case of ordinary beings. Though Buddhas and us, ordinary beings, will listen to the Dhamma in the beginning, they may find it interesting, but later on, they don't find any essence in the Dhamma. They will feel bored with listening to the Dhamma. Now, the preaching is about Dhamma and Vinaya. One should consider these things as one's own welfare and listen with full attention, understanding the correct method of practice in order to undertake the practice. Though one may be listening without interest in the beginning, because one feels try about the Dhamma and the practice, gradually one will be able to take interest in the practice so that it becomes, Dhamma becomes unalloyed and the pleasure of the Dhamma becomes unalloyed and unforsakable. And then one will come to discover it as full of essence, and one will consider it has one's own welfare and prosperity, paying full attention. Such is the strength of the noble ones. At this point, from Sarah's experience from 14 years ago, or more than 14 years ago, at the Maasi Meditation Center, the Venerable, late Venerable Martin Sato used to give the Maas talks every Uposaka on Sabbath days, so that people from outside would come and listen. And the Venerable Martin Sato gave a talk for the welfare of oneself, for themselves, and also talk about the disciplinary rules. And because the talk was not interesting for many people in those days, the talk even was for 1 or 2 hours, sometimes 2 hours. And there were no such thing as committees or humorous stories included in the talks. It is only the practical oriented talks as are the Satipatthana talks are. So after 2 hours, when the Dhamma talk was over, a young man came and said that for him, since there was no essence in the talk, he didn't take any interest and you felt very dry and bored. Which is correct that for some people who have not undertaken the practice or have no interest, will feel very dry because such talks are practically oriented talks. And they are not interesting for many folks. So as for some people later on, as for the practitioners, they take interest in the talks.
Okay, thank you.
I'll stop here for the day.